From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the George Washington Lisner Auditorium in Washington, D.C., Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Oh, you are right to be excited. I concur, because we have a great show for you today. It's so exciting to be back here in Washington, D.C., because everything we've been told about all the change here, it's true. The fountain in front of the Capitol flows with cherry Coke. The metro now powered by liquefied cheerfulness. And the porta-potties on the National Mall smell like chocolate. Later on, we're going to be talking to Senior Presidential Advisor David Axelrod. Think of him as the Rasputin in this magic kingdom. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Ron in Alberta.
In Alberta, Canada?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow. I don't know if we haven't had somebody from Alberta before. That's exciting. What's it like there?
Well, right now, I'm on a 3,000-acre ranch, and it's been snowing and raining all day.
Really?
Yes.
That is a lot of area to shovel.
Yes, it is.
That's what I think. Well, welcome to the show, Ron. Let me introduce you to our fabulous panel this week. First, say hello. It's a television personality and a regular contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hello, Mo.
Hi, Ron.
Next. It's one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, the most glamorous woman in this city, Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Roxanne Roberts.
And finally, a comedian who will be performing at the Canyon Club in Agoura, California on June 13th, Paula Poundstone, right there.
Hey there, Paula.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Ron, no time to waste. Let's start with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is now going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you win the prize. Carl's voice on your home answering device. Ready to go?
Yes, I am.
Now, we're going to start with the absolute A number one, top of the fold story. Dominated the news this week. Carl.
I was actually standing on a cliff, and it was very, very windy.
That was a young woman offering what turned out to be a reasonable explanation, at least to Donald Trump, of how she ended up being photographed topless. Who is it?
Miss California.
Yes, Miss California. At a press conference on Tuesday, shown nationwide on live television, Carrie Prejean said that the latest batch of topless photos were caused by a sudden gust of wind that happened to both blow off her skimpy top, while at the same time, by the same coincidence, a professional photographer caught in the whirlwind landed right in front of her, his finger depressing the button on the camera. She also argued that by breaking the rules of the pageant and engaging in political advocacy, in her case against same-sex marriage, she was merely exercising the rights her grandpappy fought for at the Battle of the Bulge. Interviewed in heaven, her grandfather said, "Yep, there we all were, freezing to death in the Ardennes, and what kept us going was the thought as if we win this fight, someday my granddaughter will have the right to express her views on opposite marriage via the medium of her bare artificial breasts." That's what it was.
I feel terrible for Miss North Carolina, who actually is Miss USA now.
Who cares about her?
No, because she was elected Miss USA, and the number two has all the power. It's like the last administration. It's terrible. Where is she? It's like the Miss USA at Avignon. It's like a whole separate Miss USA is competing with her.
Unlike the last administration, her boobs are fake.
All right, Ron, here is your next quote.
"We are trying to turn the page, and he's climbing out of the grave to haunt us."
That was a Republican operative speaking anonymously because he's afraid of being bitten and turned into a zombie himself. He was talking about someone in his party who simply will not stay dead, metaphorically speaking. Who?
Oh,
can we give a clue?
Should have been watching more PBS and less CBC.
Is there any difference?
A couple letters.
Think.
I guess that's right. I guess that's true. Yeah. Ron, let me give you a hint here. Basically, fellow Republicans want him to go back to his secure, undisclosed location.
Rush Limbaugh?
No. No?
Wow, I wonder if that location was in Alberta.
Yeah, it's possible. No, no idea. Not him.
No, I used up all my good guesses. Yeah, no,
it's Dick Cheney, the former vice president, of course. The former vice president's current undisclosed location seems to be the Fox News green room. He has now done more talk show appearances just since Obama's inauguration than he did in the last 2 years of his own administration combined. Democrats are delighted with this development. For them, the only better spokesman for the GOP would be the resurrected corpse of Richard Nixon. Republicans, though, are generally appalled that one of the least popular figures in their party is now the most prominent. They say, sure, Mr. Cheney, you have every right to defend your policies, but did you have to create a new reality show called Truth or Enhanced Consequences? You have any thoughts on Mr. Cheney?
Chair of Republicans. Like, he keeps saying this is the farewell tour, and then it keeps going on and on.
Yeah. Ron, for your last quote, this is something special. We are bringing you, via Carl, the voice of the latest technological breakthrough.
Barack Al-Obama.
That was Carl's rendition. That's good. Of the voice of the Kindle, that's Amazon's fancy new e-book reader. Apparently nobody taught the Kindle, for all its amazing technological wonderfulness, nobody taught it to pronounce what?
Barack Obama.
Exactly right. Because, of course, on a machine whose whole purpose is to read you the daily newspaper, how often would that name come up? Last week, Amazon rolled out the latest version of its e-book reader. Now, this Kindle has a text-to-speech feature, but apparently the speech feature can't handle some common terms, like the name of the President of the United States. But one of its features is that it can be automatically updated, so new software will have pronunciation options you can choose. For Republicans, Barack Obama will be pronounced "he who must not be named." And for Democrats, the name will be rendered simply as a chorus of angels singing. So it'll be like, at his press conference, announced new credit card reforms. Like that.
It's I am who am.
Yes. Carl, how did Ron do in our quiz?
Well, Ron had two correct answers, Peter, so Ron, you win our prize.
Well done, Ron.
Thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks so much for playing.
Very good. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Mo, a big embarrassment for British Prime Minister Gordon Brown this week. Some aide left incriminating documents in a taxi cab where they were found. The documents were instructions on how to do what?
Is it a military? Because that was something that happened a few weeks ago, I think.
No.
Military.
No, not
plans.
Military document. That was the top secret anti-terrorism plans photograph.
Right, close-up of it.
Left in a cab, leaked to the press.
It was instructions concerning
Gordon
Brown.
It does have to do with his base, but not politically.
Oh, his base. Like his butt?
No.
His base.
Or his foundation.
His foundation. Oh, his makeup.
Yes, instructions. On how to make up Gordon Brown. Apparently, making the Prime Minister's face fit for the telly is an endeavor that makes the invasion of Normandy a mere jaunt across the channel. Detailed makeup instructions start with foundation. The word trowel is not used, but strongly implied. And then it goes on to describe what can be called enhanced makeup technique. From the pamphlet, and this is a real quote, "All over, like painting a wall." And ears, unquote.
Confronted with the news of his embarrassment, the Prime Minister was seen to shed a tear which cut a half-inch deep channel down his cheek. Paula, three enthusiastic, ecologically aware adventurers set sail from England recently, and what they boasted was the world's first carbon-neutral boat. It was propelled by the wind, the instruments and stuff were powered by solar energy. Well, they got into trouble. They were adrift for days, and they were finally rescued by what?
Oil tanker.
Exactly right. We now have proof God drives a Hummer. Adrift 400 miles away from land, the crew of the Fleur, as it was called, set out a mayday, and you can imagine their relief and embarrassment when the tanker Overseas Yellowstone, carrying 680,000 barrels of crude oil, steamed over the horizon to pick them up. The captain of the carbon-neutral expedition said, quote, and this is real, "The team are now safely and ironically aboard the oil tanker."
They could have just waited for the Somali rescue team to come. The seas are teeming with help today.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Dean Brokart from Coshocton, Ohio.
Say that again? Coshocton? Coshocton, Ohio?
Yes, it's from an old Indian word meaning white woman.
Meaning white woman?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
There must be a really interesting origin story. Well, welcome to the show, Dean. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Dean's topic?
Big trouble in big box land.
Big box stores, we all know them. They have a lot to offer. Discount prices, bulk items, the chance to wear sweatpants in public with no shame. This week, we read, though, about a retailer that gave customers more than they bargained for. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about mega retailers getting in a bit of trouble. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yep.
First, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Sonny Lawson says his mail-order bride, Irina, was the perfect wife for 2 years, until that fateful day in February the couple stepped into Best Buy. The 43-year-old truck driver and his wife went into the electronics giant to buy a converter box for his analog TV and walked out with a $3,500 giant plasma screen and 2-year contract for 450 digital stations. Irina, who had cooked, cleaned, and otherwise faithfully tended to her husband's needs, became so hooked on cable TV that Lawson has filed a $10 million lawsuit against Best Buy, claiming the company ruined his sex life. In papers filed in Houston federal court, Lawson says his wife spent 16 to 18 hours a day watching Law and Order reruns, TLC's Say Yes to the Dress, and especially CNN, hoping to catch a glimpse of Sanjay Gupta, for whom she, quote, developed an unhealthy obsession. As a result, Lawson says he's suffered, quote, alienation, emotional distress, and loss of conjugal relations.
Wow. A man sues Best Buy for ruining his marriage with a widescreen TV. Your next story of conflict in the aisles comes from Morocco.
His name is Norman, and he's the Walmart greeter from hell. Rebecca White was strolling down the aisle of Abbeville, Louisiana's Walmart when around the corner rushed Norman, a nutria, or giant beaver rat, with web-tined feet, coarse brown fur, and yellow, knife-sharp incisors. The nutria, native to South America, is typically 2 feet in length and 20 pounds of muskratty menace, and completely unafraid. Now, what was a nutria doing roving the aisles of Walmart, besides looking for low, low prices? The store's staff had adopted Norman, known in his native country as Norman, as its mascot. Rebecca reared back in panic, pulling the cart toward herself for protection, injuring her back and foot in the process. She is now suing the store. It is not known if Norman was injured. Being a Walmart nutria, he is, of course, uninsured.
A rogue nutria in a Walmart in Louisiana brings a lawsuit, and your last story of big box drama comes from Paula Poundstone.
Sam's Club shopper, Jose Gonzalez, considers himself the luckiest man in the world, and perhaps he is. Despite posted warnings throughout the store asking that only employees remove items from upper shelves, on Friday, May 2nd at the Sam's Club, a big box store in Parsippany, New Jersey. Just before closing, Mr. Gonzalez reached with an employees-only poll to shift a 200-roll box of Cottonelle bathroom tissue with bonus toilet paper roller featured in their Don't You Hate It When It Keeps Falling Off promotion. A stack of two boxes fell directly onto Mr. Gonzalez's head. Remarkably, he was not knocked down, and his head drove through the bottom of both cases, each of which had had rolls pilfered by disgruntled employees, leaving just enough room for Mr. Gonzalez to be pinned, standing within the two giant, cushiony soft Cottonelle bathroom tissue cases. Naturally, after regaining consciousness, he would have shouted for help, but unfortunately, his voice box was impaled by the bonus toilet paper roller. Although he drifted in and out of consciousness until being discovered by some members of the next day's morning shift, he says, while alert, he kept himself alive by repeating to himself, "I will not be killed by toilet paper."
All right, here are your choices. From Roxanne Roberts, a man who says his marriage was ruined by a widescreen TV. From Mo Rocca, a crazed nutria on the loose in a Walmart. And from Paula Poundstone, a man encased for 2 days in toilet paper who lived to tell the tale. Which of these is a real story of trouble in a big box store in the news?
Wow. I definitely want to go with A, but C sounds pretty interesting. So I think I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, the man who happened to be standing there in the store aisle when the two boxes of toilet paper fell on his head in such a way so that he was held standing upright inside two boxes of toilet paper. Is that your choice?
Yes.
All right. Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to someone who reported on the real story.
I think it was a gigantic rat. I mean, nobody really knows what it was. Why would a nutria be in Walmart? I don't know.
That was Chris Rosa. He's the managing editor of the Abbeville Meridional, talking about Norman the nutria, allegedly the animal that attacked the woman in the Walmart in his town. I'm sorry, Dean, but as you now know, Mo had the right answer. You didn't win.
And it's Norman.
Norman. Norman the nutria. You did not win, but you didn't earn a point, however, for Paula, for her terrifying story of the man caught inside the toilet paper. So thank you so much for playing. It was great to have you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
And now the game where we ask important people about unimportant things. In 1992, a young political consultant was introduced to an even younger man who hadn't at that point even decided to run for office. And despite what you've heard, he did not drop to his knees and say, "You are the light and the way and the truth." That's nonsense. Nonsense. Both men remained standing. Anyway, the man he met that day is now the President of the United States, and that political consultant is now his senior advisor, David Axelrod. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. First question. David Axelrod. Evil genius or benevolent genius?
Which part do you want me to dispute? The genius part.
You can take your pick.
No, you know what the genius is?
What is the genius?
Everybody asks me, what's the key to being a success as a consultant? Good taste.
Really?
Good taste.
That's why you work for Elliot Spitzer.
Exactly.
You thought we had forgotten about that, didn't you?
Now I know what all these people back here do.
Exactly.
You've actually got researchers.
We do. Okay. People, I mean, I have to say, people have referred to you as the Democratic Karl Rove after Democrats wanted a Democratic Karl Rove. How do you react to that?
I always reject that.
Really? Why?
I always reject that. Well, I'd like to think we're better than that.
Yeah.
But Karl wanted to run the whole Republican Party out of the White House. I don't have any aspirations to run the Democratic Party out of the White House.
Really?
Yeah.
You could, though. If you told the entire Democratic Party to go run around the block 8 times, they would. There would be a trough in the pavement.
Obviously, you're not familiar with the Democratic Party.
I didn't say they'd run in the same direction. I just said they'd do it. But one thing you have in common with Karl Rove, if I may, is that you went from political consulting, running campaigns, to governance.
Yes.
And I'm very curious as to how that felt. I mean, have you ever been in the midst of an actual policy debate where you're setting policy and said to yourself, my God, all those years when I was just talking about this in the campaign trail, I had no idea what I was talking about?
Never.
Really? Never happened? All of your preconceptions about what
there were many times when I thought I didn't know what I was talking about. There weren't times when I thought there was any consequence to that.
Oh, I
didn't
see.
Know what I was talking
okay.
about. So the initial adjustment for me and the hardest adjustment for me was when you're a political consultant or a reporter, as I've been, you kind of have control of your own life, including... You don't have to wear a tie.
Yeah.
And now I have to come to work every morning at 7 o'clock. I have to wear a tie. So I thought I'd come here, hip show.
Yeah, we're very
don't
hip.
Need a tie. And look at you guys, even Paula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To show up wearing gym shorts.
That's...
If it'll help you, you have our permission to go in feety pajamas.
But what exactly, if I may, do you do? I mean, for example, we look at...
You sound like the president.
I know. Really? They look at you and say, what are you doing here? Where do you... Get your hands out of the candy jar. You don't belong here. Leave that alone. No, I mean, I'm curious because, I mean, you guys at the Obama administration, you're very good at what I think Michael Deaver used to call the optics. So let's take the president's dog. Obviously, that was focus grouped. You really wanted to appeal to the Portuguese-American community with the choice... seriously, is it part of your job to worry about that, how things will play politically, how they'll look, how they should be framed? Is that what
I only got called in for the final three on the dog.
Really?
Oh, I wasn't there at the beginning of the
process.
Seriously,
were you consulted?
I was not consulted.
Really?
I was not consulted.
Really?
Yeah.
But who were the other two? I mean, were there really two others?
One was Miss California,
actually. Yeah, yeah. Oh. Dude, you just lost the carelessly topless demographic for 2012. You said a little while ago that sometimes you'll go and you'll give your opinion to the president, of course. But do you correct him? Do you tell him he's wrong? And has that changed since before the inauguration and now?
You know, that's interesting. Honest to God, the most remarkable thing about him is how even he is. He's really in so many ways the same guy I met years ago.
Yeah.
And he's very open to discussion, criticism. People can challenge him. He'll challenge you back.
Can I ask a question? If a screw goes loose, I mean, if he says something really sort of crazy, who is the person that has to respond to it first? Like, for instance, if he said... You know who I want for the envoy to North Korea? Miss California. Whose responsibility would it be to say, stop?
Look, as I said, he takes this well. Generally, I pass a note to the person to the left of me and say, you really ought to mention something about this Miss California thing.
And strangely, the person left you has to be constantly replaced.
Yes.
David, did you ever become sick of the word change yourself? Because for a lot of us, that really became too much after a while.
Did we overdo?
Yeah. Right. I wouldn't even ask people to break a dollar anymore.
We thought about change, but we...
Yeah.
We're so invested in it.
We are honor-bound to ask you this. We promised the media we would. Where does the president smoke, and what is he smoking?
I have no knowledge of that.
Really? The people listening at home don't know this, but he just leaned and consulted with counsel before saying that. You have no personal knowledge.
I have no personal knowledge of that.
No?
And
never smell it on his breath?
You know, President and I are close, but I don't get that close.
No, I understand. Well, David Axelrod, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here today to play a game... We're calling...
No, we can't.
You guys in the Obama campaign and administration, you are not the first bunch of bright-eyed optimists to call for national renewal. There have been all kinds of utopians and dreamers before you in America. We're going to ask you three questions about some very, very wonderful ideas about political change that ended badly. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is presidential advisor David Axelrod playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Joanne Martinez of Washington, D.C.
All right. Here we go. One of the most important and influential early social philosophers was the Frenchman, Charles Fourier. He inspired the founding of utopian communes across America in the early 19th century. Fourier said that if we just lived according to his rules, what wonderful things would happen to people. A, they would never need to eat again. B, they would be able to walk around entirely naked in all weather. Or C, they would grow powerful prehensile tails.
Ooh.
So they could walk around naked in any weather, even when it's not windy?
Yes. Windy, no windy, warm, cold, they would just achieve the ability to no longer need clothing if they just lived according to his precepts.
No ties?
No ties. Sounds attractive to you, doesn't it?
I'm picking that one.
You're going to go for that one. It's a dream of his, but it's not true. He said that if people adopted his methods of living, his rigorous ways of social organization, they would all grow powerful prehensile tails.
Jeez, I'd love that.
People actually tried to live the way he, in what he called his phalanxes, his communes in Ohio and elsewhere, and despite the best attempts, no tails were ever noticed. All right. You have two more chances. You have two more chances. You've lost the first primary, but there are many more to go.
They'll win the caucuses. They'll make up for it there.
Another Frenchman, Barthélemy Prosper Enfantin. He founded a utopian commune outside Paris in the 19th century, and he dictated not only how his followers should live, but what they should wear, including what? A, shapeless white gowns with masks, so that people would have to deal with each other without knowing or reacting to their sex. B, vests that buttoned up in the back so that people had to rely on each other, even to get dressed. Or C, large signs that advertised people's personal dislikes and likes in a special code so that people would know how to treat each other.
Mm. All right, I'm going with the vests.
You're going to go with the vests. You're correct. That's what it was.
Nice.
Very good. The vests buttoned in the back. The idea was to stress interdependence. It takes a village to get each other dressed, was the idea. All right, it all comes down to this. Last question. One of the earliest utopian communities here in America was founded in New England in the 1790s by one William Dorrell. Things went south when a claim that Mr. Dorrell made about himself turned out to be untrue. What was the claim? A, that he could drink raw sewage and survive. B, that he was impervious to pain. Or C, that he could calm down the warlike Indians over there simply by smiling at them.
I don't think any of them were true.
I do want to point out before you answer that your boss, Obama, got two right when he
was on the
show.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And don't think he won't remind me if I don't get this right. I'm going with C.
I'm sure your boss could do that, but he claimed to be impervious to pain. I'm so sorry. He said what happened was, he said his religious faith made him impervious to pain, and he was preaching this one day at a meeting, and a skeptic got up and said, yeah, and socked him in the jaw, and kept hitting him until Durrell said, actually, yes, I do feel pain, and could you please stop hitting me? And his followers were so disillusioned that they all abandoned camp and left.
I had that sensation trying to answer the question.
I know. Carl, how did David Axelrod do in our quiz?
Well, David needed at least two correct answers to win for Joanne Martinez, but he had just one.
You played it right. You did not show up your boss. David Axelrod played a key role in the successful presidential campaign of Barack Obama. He is now a senior advisor to the president. David Axelrod, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to have you. Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl opens up his patented can of Carl's Rhyme Sauce in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. 1-888-WAIT-WAIT is the number. That's 1-888-924-8924. That's right, Rhyme Sauce. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, Arlen Specter, Democratic Senator of Pennsylvania, though that may have changed since we began this broadcast, had to change one of his websites. The problem was that it was asking for campaign donations, but implied strongly that the donations would really help do what?
Defeat Obama in 3.5 years.
No. It was sort of his version of a Live Strong bracelet or a Race for the Cure.
All right. It implied that it would cure cancer.
Exactly right.
No.
Yes.
If they gave money to his website?
Yes. Let me explain. On a recent talk show appearance, Specter, who, by the way, has survived 2 bouts of cancer himself, he promoted the website SpecterForTheCure.com. Specter for the Cure, which, if you look at it, seems very clearly to be raising money for cancer research. It says things like, quote, "It's time to unleash the cure." And what is the cure? Re-electing Arlen Specter to the U.S. Senate. All the money donated to the site goes right to his campaign fund. It has nothing to do with medical research. Under criticism, Specter has agreed to redesign the site. It's now called LoseWeightNowWithSpecter.com.
Arlen Specter's Nigerian campaign staff. in Lagos, Pennsylvania.
Paula, this week the FDA informed the makers of one product that, according to claims made on its packaging, it was a drug. So what does the FDA say they can classify as a drug?
Oh, my.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
Some drugs you smoke, some drugs you ingest, some you eat with milk out of a heart-shaped red bowl.
Out of a heart-shaped red bowl. I know what you mean. It's not... Well, I think we've all done that. It's it's a cereal.
It's a cereal. Specifically, it's Cheerios.
Oh, Cheerios.
Cheerios.
Oh, my gosh, we've been putting the wrong cereal on our bowl.
Haven't you watched the commercial? Thanks to the claim that Cheerios are, quote, clinically proven to lower cholesterol, end quote, Cheerios becomes the first drug since peyote to be available in regular and honey nut variety. In a warning letter to General Mills, makers of Cheerios, the FDA said the cereal may not be marketed with that cholesterol claim in the U.S. without a new approved drug application. Turns out it's not the only cereal, Cheerios, that may be forced to tighten up. Trix is now changing its slogan to Silly Rabbit. Trix is for those 18 and older. And may cause irritable bowels. Consult your doctor if your sugar high lasts more than 4 hours.
Arlen Specter has been selling Cheerios.
Yes. Mo, the AT&T building in San Jose had to be evacuated. A hazmat team had to be called in. And 7 employees hospitalized after an office worker there did what?
The building was evacuated, 7 people had to be hospitalized.
And a hazmat team called in.
Called in because an employee there, is it something gross?
It's so gross.
It was pretty gross.
So gross.
Think lunch break.
At a lunch break, you might, something in a microwave. Yeah. At a lunch break.
Think appliances.
A microwave, a blender, a toaster, an espresso maker.
Oh, great.
A refrigerator.
Yes.
A refrigerator. And something happened.
What did the employee do?
Pooped in the refrigerator.
No. Remind me never to invite you over to my kitchen.
Okay. No, because you get confused, and it's white, and it's gleaming, right? Okay. She unplugged the refrigerator.
No. She was trying to do a good thing.
She was trying to clean the refrigerator.
Yes. She decided to clean the office fridge. And as Milton said, all hell broke loose. Every office has that same refrigerator. It's filled with ancient leftovers from office parties and forgotten lunches. Here's a lesson for you all. Leave it be. An employee decided to do something about it. She emptied the fridge. She pulled all the stuff out. She started cleaning it. And the combination of the rotting food and the solvent she was using created this gaseous cloud that caused widespread nausea. 7 people were hospitalized. 28 received treatment from paramedics. And yes, a hazmat crew was called in to clean it up.
That's
The hazmat crew was necessary when a certain bologna sandwich refused to get back in the fridge. It was running under the furniture, and they had to use special tools.
That's horrible.
And by the way, this is true. I mean, you say, well, how could she get away with this? She couldn't smell a thing. She had allergies. So she just looked up. These white-suited guys with masks were coming in. She's like, what?
So what do you think the leftovers were?
I bet they were like pita pocket kind of things that contain meats and vegetables and things that can sort of, I don't know,
like
fester
hot
in there. Yeah,
yeah,
like a hot pocket, a hot pocket.
I was thinking some leftover Taco Bell.
Really?
Yeah.
That's where you go.
Taco Bell would never be leftover.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, this or any game, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, and you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Monica Wright in Minneapolis.
Hey, Monica, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. What do you do there in Minneapolis?
I'm a writer for a couple of newspapers and magazines.
Well, let's get to it.
Monica, I will do that.
Monica, welcome to the show. Carl Castle right now is going to put on his poet's hat and read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Absolutely.
Here is your first limerick.
I hate needles flung with an uncouth flick, but I want chi to flow for my youth kick. Let us use wooden pins that do not pierce my skin. I think this might work with a...
prick?
It could work. But it's a two-syllable answer. Two-syllable answer. Rhymes with uncouth flick.
Toothpick.
Toothpick. Yes. So let's say you'd really like to try acupuncture, but you're scared of needles piercing your skin. Turns out, toothpicks work just as well.
Wow.
Scientists split back pain sufferers into two groups and gave one group traditional acupuncture with the pins going through the skin. Another group just got poked with toothpicks. Just poked them a little. The same proportion of toothpick pokies reported relief, as did the acupuncture pin cushions. The scientists say they aren't sure whether the poking itself is the cure or whether it's psychological, but the improvement has inspired them to begin a new study into the controversial I'm not touching you therapeutic massage technique. Here is your next limerick.
When out of town, I have to roam. I pack more than toothbrush and comb. I bring a perfume called Eau de Mudroom. Then I'll be reminded of...
home?
Yes. Hotels may never feel like home, but thanks to a new company, they can now smell like it. According to a spokesman for laterooms.com, quote, we send an expert aroma designer around to their house who captures the different smells in their house, then goes away, copies it, and puts it in a spray can to be used whenever the customer wants. Sounds very nice, but our assumption, of course, is that most travelers want something that smells better than home. Otherwise, they wouldn't be traveling so much. Say, a combination of gourmet cooking, ocean breezes, and that nice scent that diamond necklaces have after Angelina Jolie takes them off to be more comfortable. All right, Monica, here is your last limerick.
They arrive in a pickup at dawn. The wallabies eat, then are gone. The marsupials rule, cause there's no noisy tools, as wallabies work on my...
lawn?
Lawn, yes, very good. Put away your John Deere. The hot item in lawn care today is lawn mowing wallabies. The pint-sized, kangaroo-like wallabies are so popular now in Britain that there's a waiting list for their services. And while sheep and goats could do as good a job, wallabies are cuter, they're more exotic, and they can handle a lawn faster than a mower ridden by death himself. The wallaby lawn care program is not flawless, however, as some owners report having to pull on the wallaby's tail as many as 3 or 4 times before it starts. Carl, how did Monica do in our quiz?
Monica was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers. Monica, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done. Thank you, Monica.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
Bye.
Now, onto our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Mo Rocca has 3. Roxanne Roberts, 2.
All right. Roxanne, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Students at Notre Dame protested plans to award an honorary degree to blank this Sunday.
President Obama.
Right. Criticism over his lackluster speech on the Holocaust threatened to overshadow blank's first trip to Israel.
The popes.
Right. Astronauts from the space shuttle Atlantis began spacewalks to repair the blank.
The Hubble.
Right. In a press conference on Thursday, Nancy Pelosi accused the CIA of misleading her in 2002 about the use of blank.
Waterboarding.
Right. A Florida jewelry store worker and supposed robbery victim became a suspect when he used the word blank to describe the thieves.
Me.
He said, no, actually, he said we. Paramount Pictures had one of its biggest opening days ever with the release of the new blank movie.
Star Trek.
Right. With the slogan, it's bleepin' golden, an Illinois company has begun selling voluminizing shampoo in honor of blank.
Blago.
Yes, Rob Blagojevich. Mourners who visit cemeteries in Austria are calling for a ban on blank.
Snitchel on the grave sites.
No, they're asking for a ban on talking electronic tombstones. The new high-tech monuments, fitted with screens and speakers that play recordings of the deceased when loved ones or anyone go by, said one woman, quote, I was kneeling beside my husband's grave saying a prayer when I heard a voice and then laughter and music. When I looked around, I saw a dead man's face talking to me from the tombstone next door. Mourners complained the last thing they want to hear is Grant and Hilda still asking when they're finally going to settle down. Carl, how did Roxanne do in the quiz?
Roxanne had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points on the lead.
Very good. All right. Mo, you are up next. Here we go. Fill in the blank. In a change of position, President Obama moved to bar the release of blank.
Photos of detainees.
Yes, detainees being abused. As part of its bankruptcy filing, blank said it would eliminate 789 dealerships.
Chrysler.
Right. A power tool used to clear brush is suspected to have started the blank in Southern California.
Fire.
Right, the wildfire. Journalist Roxana Saberi was released from jail in blank on Monday.
Iran.
Right, a crematorium in the UK has been condemned by religious leaders for replacing its organist with a blank.
A jukebox.
No, close. Worse, a karaoke machine.
Oh, gosh.
The Senate Finance Committee heard a proposal to begin charging a 3-cent tax on blank.
Senate Finance Committee is going to do a 3-cent tax on soda?
Yes, comedian Wanda Sykes. Comedian Wanda Sykes came under fire from conservatives for her jokes about Rush Limbaugh at the blank.
White House Correspondents'
Day. Right, to relieve stress among its students, a school in China is encouraging students to blank.
To jazzercise.
No. They're encouraging students to attack punching bags dummies of their teachers. What better way to relieve anxiety about your upcoming report for Ms. Lee than by pummeling a sandbag with her face on it? Explained the vice principal, quote, it's better for them to release it within the school than other places. I don't care if they beat up my dummy, unquote.
It's the Joy Fight Club.
Yes. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Mo now has 15 points and has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. I get to ask a lot of questions in my job. I like asking no question more than, how many then does Paula need to win?
6 correct answers.
6 correct answers, Paula. Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. David McKiernan was replaced as the commander of U.S. forces in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. On Monday, the price of a blank rose 2 cents.
A stamp.
Right. The erotic services category of classified ads will be removed from blank in a week.
Craigslist.
Right. After a long legal battle, John Demjanjuk was finally deported to blank to face war crimes charges.
Germany.
Right. To describe the habit of working while playing or playing while working, an expert has coined the new phrase blank.
Plurking.
No. Weezer time. Work, leisure. Weezer.
Weezer.
After attacking him on her show in 2006 for faking his memoir, Oprah Winfrey this week apologized to author blank.
Oh, 1,000 pieces, author, have no idea of the man's name. I'm going to say Kirk Douglas.
No, it's James. James Fry. On Thursday, Twitter users were the first to report widespread outages on blank.
I don't know.
It was Google. Google went out on Thursday.
Oh.
A diner in Wales who called to complain that the pizza he had bought had no toppings realized in the middle of the phone call that blank.
He wasn't at a pizza place.
No, that the pizza that he was looking at was upside down. He opened his box of frozen pizza, and he discovered, he says, the pizza's just a slab of plain dough, nothing on it. He was irate. He called the supermarket where he bought it, and he was like, you sons of guns, and he was yelling and complaining, and halfway through his four-minute rant, he turned the pizza over and made an astonishing discovery. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Well, Peter, she needed at least 6 correct answers to win, but Paula had just 4 correct
answers.
So with 15
bad.
Points, Mo Rocca is this week.
Well done.
Congratulations.
Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, after Miss California's photo debacle, what will be the next catastrophe caused by too much wind? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing firsthand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com. CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Allie Lang. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Stacey Abbott, Eric Annis, and the crew of the Listener Auditorium. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next problem caused by a mighty wind? Paula Poundstone.
The wind will blow the pages of Joe Biden's speech off the lectern at his next elementary school appearance. He'll have to wing it, and his words will be the first shot across the bow in our war with Canada.
Roxanne Roberts.
While supervising a photo shoot in California, a wind shear will catch Donald Trump's comb-over, lift him high over the Pacific, and he will last be spotted about 100 miles south of Hawaii.
And Mo Rocca.
Stunning disclosure. It was while being briefed on waterboarding in 2002 that a door opened and a wind blew Nancy Pelosi's blouse open, distracting her from the briefing.
Well, if any of those wind-related disasters happen, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Roxanne Roberts, and Paula Poundstone. Thanks to Karen Mathis, Letty Holman, everyone at WAMU in Washington. Thanks to Stephen Knapp at George Washington University. And thanks to our fabulous audience here at George Washington Lisner Auditorium. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.